Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Let's go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on third and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
I am now 4-0. Picking the Patriots games this year. Fear me, I am coming again. Welcome inside the playbook for a Tuesday. All right, that's enough of that. Better to be lucky than good. I think I put that on my Facebook page this week. And frankly, I'd like to be both. But I think in the case of the New England Patriots, it wasn't so much luck as it was opportunistic luck. They were put in the right place at the right time. They put themselves in the right place at the right time. And, you know what? Hey, the result is you get a win. You get a win over the team that was the top-ranked team and all the power rankings that exist that, you know, people, you know, give a darn about. You know, the number one team in the NFL. I realize it was only through 3 weeks, but nevertheless, that was a very good football team the Patriots beat on Sunday in Baltimore. If you watch the game at all, you have to agree. That was a good football team. There's only one team that I've seen thus far, and I've seen just about everybody that matters right now, thanks to you know, a little thing called satellite television, and you know, you watch NFL Network, and you get a chance to watch some of the NFL replays, you know, and condensed, concise. By the way, that's an awesome thing to do, and believe me, I have to pay for my NFL Network as I pay for the dish, just like everybody else here. But I love on an afternoon. Watching an NFL game on a Tuesday or a Wednesday. It's
when
great.
You're doing the show from your basement?
Yes, I am doing that. It is on NFL Network when I'm doing the show from my basement on Wednesdays. So that's my trade-off for missing out on the pizza in here in the studio, is that I'm at least at home watching a game. So I guess that's, you know, my burden. I'll have to carry it. such as it is, right? But quite frankly, love it. And I've seen everybody that I think matters at this point in time. I'd say I looked at the power rankings that Mike Florio does for ProFootballTalk.com, and if you haven't seen them, I'm going to run through them just briefly for you here. He has the Giants 1, Colts 2, Vikings 3, Saints 4, Pats 5 this week. And then 6 through 10 are Baltimore, Chicago, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, Atlanta. Who's missing? Well, first of all, the Jets. Second of all, Denver, and they're 4-0. And we'll get into that a little bit more later on and certainly throughout the course of the week. But that's Mike Florio and ProFootballTalk.com. That's their power rankings that he does every week, not only for his site but also for NBCSports.com. The Ravens were pretty much a consensus one last week, and the Patriots knocked them off. And so, you know, here's the thing. You get a 6-point win. Feeling pretty good about yourself. Yes, you must count your blessings, and you can count them all at least on one hand, because there's no question in my mind that ball by Mark Clayton with around 30 seconds to go was dropped. Granted, if he had caught that ball, there's still no way of telling whether or not the Ravens would have scored. They would have had roughly a half a minute. What do they have left on the clock? Do they have a timeout left? Yes, I believe they also had a timeout left. So they probably call it there if the Patriots keep him in bounds. And there was only one defender on the play. So I guess that's even questionable whether or not they would have been able to keep him in bounds. But they would have had, by my estimation, at least 4 downs to crack at the end zone from there. Because he would have had, you know, at worst, probably 26, 27 seconds, somewhere in that vicinity. And that's a good, I mean, and you're talking about, you know, from, you know, basically a goal-to-go situation. So you're talking about 4 cracks at the end zone. If he hadn't dropped the ball on that 4th down. Maybe he did. My guess is that, and Mark Clayton said as much after the game, if you saw the quotes, the guess is that, yeah, he took his eyesight off of the ball because he was trying to figure out where the defender was and whether or not he had a chance to spin, pivot, push himself into the end zone. He, you know, conceivably, looking at the replay, he could have, with the right move, he could have scored. I'd say it's unlikely because I think the Patriots would have got him before he had gotten there. But, yeah, it's possible. Poor tackling. Sure, it happens. Nevertheless, he dropped it. Patriots win. Go down on a knee, kill the clock, move to 3-1, and they get themselves a very good win over a very good football team. One thing that, you know, I will say this about Bill Belichick. You know, he's not very forthcoming with plaudits one way or the other after the games are over. You know, his post-game press conferences really are, I mean, he doesn't really say much. He does, you know, praise his team when he feels it's warranted, and he did that. He praises the other team when he certainly feels it's warranted, and he did that. He doesn't get into a whole lot of particulars. But he is right when he says that football team that the Patriots beat on Sunday will win their fair share of games. He did say that. You know, I'm looking at Baltimore, and I'm looking at their schedule, and I'm thinking, shoot, they could win 12-13 pretty easy. You know, I'm thinking right now that, you know, that to me, that team, well, it's hard to say if it's the team to beat, because you got the defending champs in that division. Although, you know, Pittsburgh needs some help defensively after watching that game against San Diego the other night. You know, they do miss Polamalu without a doubt in my mind. They miss him solely because, I mean, you gave up. I mean, I realize, you know, you're probably playing prevent and, you know, and you're protecting. But I gave up 28 points to a team that they had dead and buried and, you know, and had to sweat a little bit late in the game on Sunday night. And I just, you know, Pittsburgh's defense, plus, of course, I don't know if anybody, did anybody see WWE Raw last night with Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers offensive line?
Attention, you are all losers.
No, actually, I watched it last night specifically for that. I watch it with my 14-year-old anyway. That's the one thing that, you know, father and son do. You know, you don't have a whole lot of things in common with the 14-year-old kid. I think we all realize that, even if he is a sports nut and he does want to take my job someday. I've actually had him on this show in previous years when he was younger, and he would outpick me. He'd outpick everybody. Maybe we'll have to reprise that again, Jace. You know, maybe we have, you know, picks by the rookie every week.
Yeah, bring him in.
Yeah, you know. If I could ever get him, you know, away from
put him in your basement.
Well, that too. He's got to come home from football practice himself, though, so that's part of the problem right now. But, you know, fact is that, you know, I have a little, you know, family time, and since he was about 9 years old, we've always watched WWE Raw, and, okay, just something to do together, father-son. It's entertainment. It's a soap opera is what it is. It's just like, you know, women watching their stories and guys, for that matter. I'm all-inclusive here. I used to be a big fan of all my children back when I was in college and in my 20s. I used to watch that soap opera all the time. So it's a sports soap opera is what it is, you know, with plots and turns and twists and storylines you follow. And, you know, it's scripted. We all know that. So we're watching that last night, and I'm thinking I particularly want to watch it because Roethlisberger is going to be there, and he did okay. You know, he did all right. He played up to the hype. The offensive line was kind of goofy because they were all out there on the, you know, in the ring, and they're doing the, you know, Degeneration X, you know, suck it thing that they do and all that kind of stuff, you know. And if you don't know about wrestling, you're probably wondering, they did what? Do yourself a favor. You just have to watch it. It's entertainment. It's a good show. But they probably had all their attentions on that. That's Monday Night Raw appearance, even though they did win the game. I can't imagine what it would have been like had they lost to San Diego and a 1-3 Pittsburgh Steelers team of Ben Roethlisberger were going to go to wrestling, WWE wrestling on a Monday night. Yikes. But they didn't. Get back to the original point. Their defense needs work. And I don't want to say that Pittsburgh that Baltimore's the out-and-out favorite, but frankly, they look like a team to beat to me. I'm very, very much impressed. Very much impressed with Joe Flacco. He just looks like a statue back there, doesn't he? I mean, he's big, he's long, he's lean, he's strong, he's chiseled, he's everything. He's got, you know, pro quarterback just written on his forehead is what this guy has. He seems to have all of the physical tools, all of the attributes, he's got them all. So I'm wondering, as I kind of consider, you know, where their future might be, you know, I'm just, you know, they'll lose along the way, but they look pretty good. They're probably only going to continue to get better as the season progresses with a guy like Flacco running the show. If they had one, what I would call game-breaking receiver, taking nothing away from Derek Mason, who I think the Patriots adjusted on very, very well after he seemed to be open on every stinking play in the opening quarter of the game. You know, and they adjusted, and Belichick explained it yesterday by saying that the Pats, decided to take a safety over the top and devote him to, helping out on the receiver, which left less open space for Flacco to throw into, therefore a little bit more doubt, I think, for him to throw, and so he didn't go Mason's way as much after the first quarter. And it certainly makes sense to me. You have to make an adjustment, otherwise the guy's going to kill you. And so you give the Patriots credit. They adjusted to what Baltimore was running and what they were throwing. And they got through that okay. I'm thinking that if they had... I don't know that I should be using this name, but I'm thinking if they had a Joey Galloway, you think they want him? No, maybe a Galloway in his prime. That kind of guy who could loosen defenses up, and I think that's what the Patriots obviously hoped that they were going to get with Galloway, and it hasn't happened. And I can only imagine that Galloway's time is measured by the thimbleful rather than by the bucketful right now here in New England. A healthy scratch should, as he was this past Sunday, should tell the story right there. And be interesting to see what the injury report looks like this week and or what the active list will be like for Sunday's game at Denver. I had somebody ask me yesterday as well, why don't they just cut him? And I think it's because they obviously have him. He's being a veteran. I think he's got a veteran salary, so I think he's due it whether he plays or not, based on his particular deal. So my guess is that they're trying one last way to send him a message. Maybe they're giving him a little downtime so he can continue to look at the playbook and try to figure out whatever the hell it is he can't figure out in order to get him on the same page. But the Patriots, Baltimore certainly could use someone with that kind of game breaking ability. I think that they're probably a receiver like that away from being an elite team. I think their defense is good enough. Baltimore's defense is good enough to win a Super Bowl. I think their offense can be good enough to win a Super Bowl. They got a great running game. I love Ray Rice. Ray Rice is the guy the Patriots should have gotten. I realize he's only 5 foot nothing, but can that guy run? He's built so low to the ground, you basically have to, kiss earthworms to tackle the guy. Dude is hard to tackle. And he's fast and he's shifty. He's got the package. He's got enough leg strength where, 5'7", 5'8", that's not going to hurt him. I think Ray Rice, he's the reason that, Willis McGahee, I realize McGahee's got some mileage on him now, especially in light of the knee injury a few years ago, but, he's made McGahee, he's put McGahee into a part-time role. Ray Rice is the guy. He's a good back. And so when you have Rice and McGahee as a 1-2 tandem there in the backfield, you got a pretty good fullback as well. You got a quarterback that is only going to continue to improve. Somebody also asked, and I heard this debated on local radio here yesterday, who would you take right now? And so I'm going to ask you this question straight up. Okay, you've seen them over the last 2 weeks. You've seen each of these players over the last 2 weeks, Patriots fans. So this is question number one to you today inside the playbook. Webradio@patriots.com. Okay, I want you to answer this. We'll get into nitpicking and stuff just shortly. But I want you to answer this question for me right now. Who would you take, Joe Flacco or Matt Ryan, and why? I think the Patriots have gone up against two of the most promising young quarterbacks in the entire NFL each of the last 2 weeks. I don't think you could go wrong by taking either one of them. But I heard an impassioned argument yesterday for Joe Flacco and why this person would have taken Flacco over Ryan. See, I think Flacco doesn't have, in my own personal opinion, is that Flacco doesn't have as much what I would call spit and polish as Matt Ryan does. I think Ryan is a more polished product right now. I think Ryan knows how to, he's not as physically strong. He's certainly, I think, more elusive in the pocket than Flacco is right now. But I think Ryan just seems to me to have a little bit more of a sense of how to drive a team, whereas Flacco is probably utilizing more of his teammates' abilities, if that makes sense at all. Ryan right now, to me, has more of an ability to carry a team on his shoulders than Flacco does. So if you were to ask me who I would take right now, I would take Matt Ryan. That's just me. There are many of you, and like I said, I heard several impassioned arguments yesterday about on this very subject, who would take Joe Flacco in a heartbeat over Matt Ryan, looking at it big picture. I can't disagree with that. You know, Flacco could very easily turn out to be a better pro after everything is all said and done. But he's not as polished as Matt Ryan is right now. Number one, has something to do with the fact that he probably came from an FCS team, which was formerly 1AA, Delaware. Nothing against the Blue Hens. But Matt Ryan was playing at Boston College, and, you know, playing a little bit, you know, tougher competition in league is going to have you more polished. It's a fact. Just look at who gets drafted. You have more FBS and more FCS players tanking. It's still Division I, but who gets tanking? Players from the 11 FBS Football Bowl Subdivision Conferences. Those are the guys that are drafted. Yes, you do get FCS teams. Yes, you do get some NAIA. Yes, you do get, you know, whatever. You do get some. Division 2s and 3s, you know, can get sprinkled in every now and then. The overwhelming majority of players drafted in the 7 rounds that you draft come from Football Bowl Subdivision Conferences. The highest level you can play. It is a fact. You're going to be better with the tougher the competition that you play. It happens in every sport you play. Can you name me one sport? Can you name me one sport where it doesn't benefit you to play tougher competition? Really? I mean, no. I mean, what, tiddlywinks? You know, where it's chance? I mean, there's something about eye-to-hand coordination for tiddlywinks, at least, didn't there? I mean, come on. You know, you want to play the best that you can, and that's what you get out of this. And so that's why I think Ryan is a little bit more of a polished product. Doesn't mean that the upside, I don't really like using that word, but I guess, you know, the potential, I suppose, for a guy like Flacco is unmistaken. But my own thought is right now I would still take Ryan. That's taken nothing away from Flacco's performance. You know, there's no question in my mind that if my team had Joe Flacco, I'd be thrilled. If you're thinking about the top 5 quarterbacks right now in the NFL, as of October the 6th, 2009, top 5 QBs in the league, who are your top 5? That'd be a good one, too. So in your same email there, why don't you ship me off who are your top 5 QBs in the league right now? Webradio@patriots.com. And we'll read through some of these in just a few minutes. But give you a chance to sound off on a couple of things here really quick. Based around the game this past Sunday. Top 5. Right now, you're going to hate me. I'm taking Peyton Manning first. And the reason is, have you seen the guy carry his team on his shoulders right now with the Colts?
It's so ridiculous.
I don't think you could go wrong by taking either Manning or Brady. But right now, as of again, I said October 6th, 2009, I'm taking Peyton Manning. Why? Because Tom Brady's still working himself back into pre-knee injury shape. That's why. But I'm taking Peyton first. I'd take Brady second. Now we're starting to get a little bit dicey, but I think based on... I think I'd have to take Drew Brees third. And I think Drew Brees has long been underrated. The fact is he hasn't thrown any touchdowns the last couple of weeks, but it's pretty clear that his Saints team isn't as bad or, you know, is a lot better than a lot of people were giving it credit for prior to his, you know, offensive explosion when this season started. Brees is still a good quarterback, so I'm taking Brees third. Number four, you know, I like Roethlisberger. You know, because all he does is seem to win. He seems to be a glue kind of quarterback that certainly is on the right team. I don't know if Roethlisberger does what he does best if he were playing for New England or if he were playing for Denver or if he were playing for Baltimore, but what he does for Pittsburgh is perfect for what Pittsburgh needs. I would say that Roethlisberger is more of a system quarterback. Doesn't mean he's bad. I just think he fits like a glove in a place like Pittsburgh. Either that, or they've done a masterful job of, you know, molding players around his talents, and that may very well be the case. I don't know them as intimately as, you know, as some do. So right now, as of October 6, 2009, I'm probably with 4 and 5. I'm taking Matt Ryan and Joe Flacco. So that's Manning, Brady, Breeze, Ryan, Flacco. Those are my five. Any disagreements? Webradio at patriots.com. 508-543-7482 is our telephone number, as you know, 508-543-7482. Share with me your thoughts, whatever you like. That is a good thing to do. Some other quarterbacks I think that certainly deserve mention in the five, if you will. I think right now, considering the way his team has played, you got to throw Favre in there. You have to. Look at what he did last night. What was he, 24-31? Shoot.
Brett Favre.
I mean, you know, he's as old as Methuselah, and yet he's still, you know, they're thrilled to have him in Minnesota. Of course, Minnesota did have to sack, Aaron, what's his face, 8 times last night? Good Lord, Rodgers. 8 times? God, please. Hello, is there an offensive lineman in Green Bay? No, probably not. But right now, you'd have to say that, you know, Favre deserves some mention there. Carson Palmer probably deserves some mention there. You'd have to say that Donovan McNabb certainly deserves some mention there. You know, busted rib and all. You could even make a case for right now, again, as of October 6, 2009, as I suggested. This is just a snapshot today. You could even make a case, I think, for Mark Sanchez. I'm not sure that I can put Tony Romo in there. In fact, I'm not going to. I'm not sure that you can put anybody else in there legitimately in terms of the elite quarterbacks. No, I don't think so. Kurt Warner? Nah, I don't think so. I don't see anybody else in there. So, I mean, Eli Manning? Yeah, probably because, you know, Eli's Giants are NBC Sports and PFT. They had the Giants number one in their power ratings this week. So, you know, and if they didn't have Eli, then yeah, you could certainly see the Giants tumble, I think. So from that aspect, I think you could probably make a strong play for Eli to be in that group as well. But I've got my top five and I'm sticking with it. Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Matt Ryan, Joe Flacco. Webradio at patriots.com. If you have your five, if
everyone
you differ.
Everyone sucks but me.
Yeah, well. No. That's why I ask you the question. I want you to provide me with your input. You know, I'm sure that somebody's going to differ out there. I'd be interested to see your take. You know, and, you know, compared the two, between Flacco and Ryan, arguably two of the best young quarterbacks in the league right now, if you had to take one to start your team, or maybe you had the choice on your fantasy football team, and you had to take one over the other, who did you pick and why? I think that's a legitimate question. Or who would you pick if you don't fantasy football? Who would you pick and why? Webradio at patriots.com. All right. Now, we do have nitpicking to get to. It is Nitpick Tuesday here inside the playbook. I've got my own thoughts on the nits to pick here. Again, it's difficult when you beat the perceived best team in the NFL. Yeah, you beat them at home. Yeah, you beat them thanks to a dropped ball. Partially because of a dropped ball by a receiver that could have won the game for them. Nevertheless, you know, as Paul Perillo and I were talking about half an hour ago, you know what? If you picked the Ravens, you weren't far off. You were within, what, 8-9 yards and 30 seconds of being right. So no matter who you picked, you didn't miss by much. My prediction last week was, and I explained this in detail to both Chris Price and Eric Scalavino when I was on the road traveling to Morgantown last Thursday. I explained, you know, why I said the Patriots win if they have Welker and why they don't win if they don't have Welker. They had Welker. I know that his numbers were not fabulous, but Welker also causes a team, in my estimation, Welker causes a team to have to prepare for him because they know that in short yardage situations, he's an option. He creates openings where openings don't previously exist. Welker runs short routes and gets open, you know, within that 5 to 7 yard variety better than any receiver I've seen in a long, long time. Maybe even ever. Especially now that the short passing game has been featured prominently in pro football over the last, you know, 10 to 15 years. Maybe not even that long. Maybe 5 to 10 years. And because he does that so well, teams have to take stock of where he is rather than, you know, hey, if it was just Julian Edelman, with all due respect to Edelman, you don't have to prepare for him. He's a rookie. He's going to bust a play or two. He's still a rookie. He's learning. And you probably feel like, you know, hey, linebacker can cover him. That's fine. Whereas a linebacker might say, you know what, I might need some help with a guy like Welker. So that kind of difference is what Welker makes. Welker is a valuable piece to the puzzle. Can the Patriots win without him? Sure. Is he the most valuable player on this team? Probably not. But he's valuable in any stretch of the imagination. He's valuable. I think I need a couple of weeks more just before I determine who the most valuable is. You could certainly make a case for Brady, but I'm still not ready to go there. You know, Moss may be more valuable than Brady. I'll explain that coming up. We will also get to your nitpicks, some of the things that you might have seen that you didn't like or you think need changing, personnel moves, strategies, critiques, criticisms. It's Nitpick Tuesday, and we'll get to some of those. We'll also read your emails at webradio@patriots.com coming up inside the playbook.
You've heard the jokes.
Flanders has cooties. Flanders has cooties.
You've heard the jabs.
Flanders is the only useless person here.
You've heard the voicemail.
Hi, you've reached the desk of Ken Flanders at Gillette Stadium.
Tomorrow, hear the man live. That's right. The infamous Ken Flanders will be appearing on Shop Talk tomorrow on American Airlines Patriots.com radio. Send us your emails, call the show, and be a part of the biggest moment in Shop Talk history. It's Ken Flanders tomorrow on Shop Talk at 4 p.m. only on American Airlines Patriots.com radio.
Where nobody sucks. Except for Flanders.
At American Airlines, we know it seems like you're on the road almost as much as your favorite sports team. We know you've scheduled a business trip to a city where your team happens to be playing that night. And we know that on every trip, you inevitably forget to bring a toothbrush. But you never forget that old pair of socks you wear on game day to bring your team luck. We know for you, it's not just a seat on a flight to a place. It's a seat on a flight to your life. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hey, don't go yet, sir.
But the light turned green.
Well, you don't go till I say so. You play by my rules. My rules. Ball start, loss of 5 yards, still first down.
What are you talking about?
Unsportsmanlike conduct, 10 yards.
Unsportsmanlike is 15 yards.
Move the chains!
You are a crossing guard.
Personal foul, 15 yards.
And stop blowing that whistle.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Delay of game,
but,
5 yards, first down.
But you're not...
Keep the Change patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services N.A. Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. Copyright 2009. Bank of America Corporation.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay, Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. And you want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on the New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together and talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery. MassLottery.com.
Man, it's football season. I mean, usually the house is decked out by now. You know, and the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got razor-sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game. I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
Right, so, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football-shaped serving trays.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Rock the Plaza every Saturday and Sunday, to the Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday, to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
John Rook with you inside the playbook for a Tuesday here on Patriots.com radio, American Airlines Patriots.com radio. Pats at the Denver Broncos. It'll be a 4:15 Eastern time kickoff this next Sunday at Mile High. Well, actually, say it's not even Mile High Stadium anymore. What do they call the stadium in Denver now?
Invesco Field at Mile High.
That's what it is. Fine. Whatever.
2:15 kickoff for those of you in Denver.
Yes, that's correct. Mark Johnson, who's the sports director at KOA in Denver. And an old friend of mine from his days covering Big East football. I actually saw him in Morgantown last Thursday, and he said, "Hey, I'm going to be on the show with you next week." Or actually, I should do it in Mark Johnson voice. "Hey, he has this deep announcing voice, and he talks, you know, kind of like, you know, I don't even do him justice, but he."
No, you sound like a bad Kermit the Frog.
He definitely has pipes. I'll give him credit for that.
He does. Yeah. I remember him back from, he used to do play-by-play when I was at Syracuse.
That is correct. He was the voice of the Orange at Syracuse for about 3 or 4 years, and then he took a job as a sports director, like I said, at KOA in Denver, where he's been ever since. So he does the Colorado Buffalo football now and basketball, and then he obviously travels quite a bit and does some of the Rockies baseball too, I think. So, yeah, so there you go. Anyway, he's going to join us here inside the playbook tomorrow, correct? Okay. So we'll get to the Denver perspective and find out just kind of, I think we all know Josh McDaniels, but how good is Denver? So we'll be jumping into some of that with Mark tomorrow. I do have some, and again, don't forget, web radio at patriots.com. A couple of early topics here. Not only your nitpicks for Tuesday, look back on whatever you thought could be fixed, can be fixed, should be fixed for the Patriots in their win over Baltimore on Sunday, which is why we have Nitpick Tuesday. But I asked you a quarterback question today. It has to do with either Flacco or Ryan, and who are you taking if you had to choose between the two? And if you could rate your top five quarterbacks right now in the league as of October 6, 2009, who are you taking? Your top five. All right. There are a couple of notes from elsewhere around the NFL that I wanted to share with you, simply because a lot of times we get so focused on, you know, what our job is and what we're doing here, and we're covering the Patriots. And frankly, there's some interesting stuff going around the NFL that sometimes in a roundabout way does have an effect on New England. or has an effect on the Patriots or the team or, you know, on football in general that, you know, I think are pretty interesting. And frankly, sometimes I overlook it, didn't realize it because of the games that I'm actually watching on Sunday. So I figured we'd just share here because we do deal with other topics, you know, from other teams around the NFL, in particularly on Thursday when we talk with Russell Baxter from ESPN. But some of the things that I noticed from this last week, I mentioned that right now, I would take Peyton Manning over Tom Brady in terms of the top five quarterbacks in the league. And here is largely the reason why. I mentioned, obviously, that I think that, you know, Brady's still trying to round himself back into shape, which I think is a lot of the reason why I would not put him at number one right now. But Manning threw for 353 in their win over Seattle. It's his fourth consecutive 300-yard passing game, and he's the third player in NFL history to start a season with four consecutive 300-yard passing games. He'd never done it before, and I actually found that a little bit hard to believe. Only Kurt Warner and Steve Young have had longer streaks in NFL history. They both went six consecutive games to start the season with 300-yard passing games. Warner did it in 2000. Steve Young did it in 98. So that, you know, when you think about, you know, Kurt Warner and Hall of Fame in the same breath, okay, you need to open yourself up to the possibility that that could happen. It could happen. He was at the controls of, you know, one of the most high-powered offenses, you know, in NFL history. And then he, after being washed up, you know, helped lead Arizona to a Super Bowl last year. So, you know, it's possible. Do I think it'll happen? I don't know. I tend to doubt it right now, but it could happen. The other thing, Randy Moss, his first touchdown of the season. And I guess some of us have been sort of wondering, wow, you know, when was that going to happen? His first touchdown catch of the season is coming in the fourth game of the season. But overall, he now has 137 career touchdowns. That is sixth all-time for most career TDs. Now, I've said here on this program, I've mentioned it to other people in passing and in debating, you know, the Patriots' fortunes. I personally believe that Moss will be here next year. I believe he's got one more year on his deal with the Patriots, and I think he'll be here. I personally believe that as long as he's able to play to a high level, in other words, as long as he's able to continue playing like he is now, I think Moss stays in until he knocks off one of Jerry Rice's records. It may be the touchdown record. He's within earshot. He would need some, you know, pretty good years, but I think he's going to try to get his piece of, shall we say, infamy. We'll see if it will end up being with New England. The other thing I'm going to mention is obviously has to do with the Patriots' opponents this week in Denver, and the aforementioned Josh McDaniels, formerly the quarterback's coach and offensive coordinator for your New England Patriots. Both Josh McDaniels and Jim Caldwell of the Colts, as rookie head coaches now, have led their teams to 4-0 starts. This is only the second time in the Super Bowl era, which would be since 1966. That's when we started playing the Super Bowl kids. Only the second time in the Super Bowl era that two rookie head coaches have started their teams off to 4-0 in the same season. Think about that. How much changeover usually happens from year to year, especially over the last 10 to 15 years in the NFL in terms of head coaches? You have anywhere from, what, 6 to as many as, what, 10 or 11 even? New head coaches, it seems, every year, right? And to think that two of those coaches could not have started 4-0 in the same year? You know, that's the odds are fairly statistically stacked against that happening. But this is the second time in now 43 years that two rookie head coaches have managed to start 4-0 in the same year. The only other year that this happened was in 2000. Al Groh was the coach of the Jets, and Mike Martz was the coach of the St. Louis Rams, the head coach then. What happened to those guys? Martz is an OC. Where is Martz an offensive coordinator? I've forgotten. Somebody will tell me. Email me and let me know. And then Al Groh is struggling right now at the University of Virginia. They're ready to run him out of town in Charlottesville. you know, based on, you know, what the Virginia Cavaliers have done. So, you know, not that that means that that's going to happen to McDaniels and Caldwell, but it just, I thought it was very interesting to look and see that that was the last time two rookie coaches both started 4-0 in the same year. And who they were, I would not have ever guessed that. I would have thought, oh, I don't know, I've got to be back in the early 60s somewhere, or, you know, maybe right around that Super Bowl time in 1966, you know, where that happened. And no, 2000. All right. Couple of other things. Observations from week four in the NFL. Colts are 4-0. Probably deserve, in my estimation, if I had to put a team in my own personal power rankings, I'd have to put the Colts up at the top. I just think what Peyton Manning has done in lifting this team kind of up on his shoulders a little bit, it's going to be very difficult for the Pats to knock them off. Something's going to have to happen. Injury-wise, or I don't, the wheels are going to have to come flying off. But that's going to be a very, very difficult. He's playing as well now as he may have played in his entire career, and that's very dangerous. The Colts are 4-0, and they have now extended their mark for most 4-0 starts since 2000 to 5. They have had 5 4-0 starts since the 2000 season. Now, granted, they've only won one Super Bowl. But it's still a pretty good start, pretty good team. You can look at the schedule a little bit and say that they're the beneficiary, but, you know, it's hard to knock them, hard to knock them. Only 4 other teams have had 2 4-0 starts since 2000. One of them is the Patriots. Vikings, Jets, Rams included as well since 2000. So those are my, you know, observations, I think, from week four on Sunday, taking a look at some of the other things going on around the NFL. I've been very impressed with Indianapolis. I didn't think they'd be that good. I didn't think Peyton Manning was, at this stage of his career, capable of doing what he's doing, and he's doing it. So I have to admit, I am looking forward to the matchup on November the 15th. that's a Sunday night game. They'll be playing in the Dome again. Why they end up in the Dome, I'm sure everybody will be asking that question as we get closer to that game. Just the way the scheduling works out, and it was a road game against the champion of that division and blah, blah, blah. And one, you know, it just, you know, clearly it's one-sided. I think that they've played the Colts, the last three of the last 4 times or something like that there. So I just think it's bizarre that it's worked out that way. Nevertheless, you know, the Patriots are going to be stuck playing there again, and that's going to be a dynamite game. I'm looking at the schedule, and Eric Scalavino and I have talked about this here on the program, but, you know, frankly, you know, he said all along, hey, if you get to the bye week at 5-2, would you be happy? And, yeah, I've come around to his way of thinking. I'd have to say 5-2. Certainly, you'd have to say your team is at least still on track. But this game last weekend was the swing game, kids, in my estimation. I thought this was a game they very easily could lose. Hence my selection of Baltimore if Wes Welker was not in the lineup. In that regard, I'm looking at the rest of the schedule. Broncos, Titans, Buccaneers. Now, could they lose this week? Sure. Could they lose the next week to the Titans? Well, I mean, I didn't think the Titans would be 0-4, did you? You had to look at that game before the season started and said, okay, that could be an L because they had the best record in the NFL last year at 13-3. So could they have gotten that crappy that quickly? I mean, you know, you have to think that if Patriots take care of business, potentially that's still a W. So now I'm thinking, you know, unless somehow they lose to a really bad Tampa team because of jet lag going overseas, I'm still thinking 6-1 here, kids, which is what, you know, I had originally hoped for and thought this team had a chance to do. Like I said, the swing game was this last Sunday against Baltimore, and they passed the test. I'm thinking 6-1 is very doable here. In fact, I'm getting closer now to being disappointed if they're not 6-1. This is the Patriots fan in me speaking. The Patriots analyst in me is saying, well, yeah, 5-2, I think, you know, at the is the worst they should do right now. They could still stub their toe this week. Denver traditionally is a very difficult play for anybody to play, and it's always been a tough place for the Patriots to play, if you look at the history. And we'll be jumping into that a little bit more as the week progresses here. Tennessee, always been a hard-fought game. And again, they could not have gone that bad from being that good that quickly. It's a team that's, you know, again, we'll examine more this time next week, but it's a team I think that's got to be snake bit a little bit and hoping that the luck will kind of turn in their favor a little bit. You hope it just doesn't happen in 2 weeks. At Tampa, you know, I mean, when you're traveling, you know, 1,500 miles to the east and moving a couple extra time zones, and yes, Tampa has the same travel as you do, but, you know, that's a huge X factor. But it should be a win. But if you look, let's just say they're able to get to 6-1 to the bye week, which I think everybody would consider a very solid accomplishment for this team, that this team is certainly on track, so to speak, to being where we hoped it could be by the end of the year, and that is a legitimate Super Bowl contender. Then you got your week off on November the 1st, and then get a load of what comes after that. This is what we thought, at least initially, was going to be not very difficult, but it certainly has turned out to be difficult now. Dolphins at Colts, Jets at Saints, Dolphins again at Dolphins. Now, again, I realize Miami's only 1-3. And, yes, Miami has lost Chad Pennington. But I think we all know that, yeah, the Patriots probably feel like they have a little payback to Miami, number one.
And mind you, that's a Monday night at New Orleans followed by a Sunday night at Miami. With every long week, there's a short week, and every short week, a long week, as somebody once said.
That's going to be, I mean, at least they have a Sunday night game as opposed to a Sunday, 1 o'clock game. You know, that does give them a benefit of 7 more hours of rest. So the schedule makers actually did the Patriots a favor. The price of fame. That's what happens when they ask you to be on, national television coverage. But Dolphins at home, at Colts, Jets at home, at Saints, at Dolphins. Wow. Man, that's a good sized gauntlet. 1, 2, 3, that's 5 games. Can they get through that stretch 3-2? Can they get through that stretch 3-2? Wow. I mean, honestly, I don't know that you can say you can. I mean, yeah, you'd have to knock off the Jets. You'd have to knock off the Saints or the Colts to make that happen. And both of those games are away. They're on the road. I love looking ahead, don't you? We can do that. They don't do this down the hallway, but we can. I love looking ahead. It's fun. Sometimes it's really stupid, but it's fun. That, to me, I mean, while the Patriots could set themselves up and have a chance to rest and to heal and all that kind of stuff on the bye week, if they get to 6-1, I think now they almost have to get to 6-1. I don't think that's my original point here. Talking about getting to the bye week at 6-1, how that was, what I had originally hoped for. And then as the season progressed and we saw how Brady was struggling, the offense is struggling, maybe 5-2 is more realistic. Now beating Baltimore, that being a swing game here, now I think 6-1 is realistic again. 6-1 to me has got to be, darn near mandatory now because you've got that 5-game stretch coming up, mid-November to early December. They need to be 6-1 because if they go 2-3, in that stretch of 5 games, which is possible, then you're facing Carolina at Buffalo, Jacksonville at Houston over the last 4 weeks with a record of 8-4. And you probably have to win all 4 of those games to make certain that you're a division champion. That would be just my estimation. I think you're going to need 12-4 to win it. I don't think 11-5 this year is going to win it because I do think that the Jets will stick around. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if the Dolphins made a run. I also wouldn't be at all surprised if the Buffalo Bills fired Dick Geron before we face them again in December. That's a strong possibility. But it wouldn't surprise me if the Dolphins got on a run, and it certainly wouldn't surprise me if the Jets hang in there from start to finish. I think 12-4 is going to be needed to make sure you win the division. So that's what I'm looking at. I'm looking at any way possible to get this Patriot team to 12-4. And I realize... And I'm saying this because we are, what, a quarter of the way through the season. We're 4 weeks through, four down, 12 more to go. So we're 25% completed with the season already at the quarter pole, right? And so now you can kind of, it's not quite in focus, but you can kind of see the big picture start to take shape. You probably need the bye week to legitimately have a good, focused view at what, you know, lays ahead. But at the same time, things can change. I think we all know that teams are capable of turnarounds. You could be 3-5 in the first half and then flip it around and go, you know, 7-1 in the second half and make the playoffs. It's possible. But if you believe in trends, if you believe in setting a pace and a tempo, then, you know, I think you want to try to get in as strong as you possibly can to the bye week, because that, you know, 5 week stretch is going to be difficult for New England. And then if they don't go 2-3, then it's going to be, you know, impossible to get to 12-4. 3-2, then I think 12-4 is all but guaranteed. If they can get through 3-2, that stretch, this team will win the division. At worst at 12-4, and they would still have obviously a shot at being able to stick at 13-3, because I think Panthers should win here. Patriots should win that here. At the Bills, Bills will be toast well before then. Jaguars could be problematic if they're in the playoff chase. At the Texans, well, if the Texans are battling for their first ever playoff spot, that's not a gimme. Okay, that will not be a layup if the Texans are in the battle. If, you know, plus if the Patriots being the last game before the playoffs start, if the Patriots have, you know, clinched a playoff spot and can't rise any higher or go any lower, then you see the Patriots basically resting. If they can't improve their playoff stock, then that could be a walkover for the Texans. Let's not forget that all of that stuff does remain on the horizon. But I mentioned the 6-1 thing just because that's going to continue to be a topic of conversation over the course of the next couple of weeks as we get closer to the bye week. Especially as we get closer to even playing the Buccaneers in London, as the Patriots do get the shot at the bye week after they return from playing Tampa. And then they get to face the Dolphins here at home, and then, you know, at Colts, Jets, at Saints, at Dolphins. Wow. That's a toughie. All right, don't forget, webradio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482. Nitpicks, haven't seen any, so that must mean that everybody's happy and satisfied, or as I like to say, fat and sassy with the Patriots and the state of this team right now. I will give you a couple of my nitpicks in just a moment. Plus, I'm still looking for your quarterback thoughts. Your top five right now as of October 6, 2009, who are your top five quarterbacks in the league? And who would you take if you had to pick one? Flacco or Ryan? And why? Webradio at patriots.com. Hour number two coming up in just a moment.
You've heard the jokes.
Flanders has cooties. Flanders has cooties.
You've heard the jabs.
Flanders is the only useless person here.
You've heard the voicemail.
I greased the desk of Ken Flanders at Gillette Stadium.
Tomorrow, hear the man live. That's right. The infamous Ken Flanders will be appearing on Shop Talk. Tomorrow on American Airlines Patriots.com radio. Send us your emails, call the show, and be a part of the biggest moment in Shop Talk history. It's Ken Flanders tomorrow on Shop Talk at 4 p.m. only on American Airlines Patriots.com radio.
Where nobody sucks, except for Flanders.
At American Airlines, we know it seems like you're on the road almost as much as your favorite sports team. We know you've scheduled a business trip to a city where your team happens to be playing that night. And we know that on every trip, you inevitably forget to bring a toothbrush, but you never forget that old pair of socks you wear on game day to bring your team luck. We know for you, it's not just a seat on a flight to a place. It's a seat on a flight to your life. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Okay, so to recap, these are last year's sales results, and here's how we stand now. I need some clutch players who can get us some numbers up on the board. Ted.
Yes, sir.
In the fourth quarter. We've come from behind in the fourth quarter before. Ted,
what?
I need you here in the shotgun. Put on this helmet.
It's a garbage can.
Do it.
But it's dark in here.
Susan!
Yes?
What? You're going to reverse right and then break left at the cubicle.
What?
I am?
Let's go!
Mr. Krevelin?
That was awkward.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
You gone?
Yes.
What?
Yes.
What?
You can take the trash can off now.
What?
Keep the Change patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services and Bank of America and a member PIC. Copyright 2009, Bank of America Corporation.
Hello?
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
50 seasons of New England Patriots football. 3 Super Bowl championships. Endless memories.
It's good! It's good!
Live them all at the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Celebrate the greatest players, moments, and teams in Patriots history with sights and sounds that put you right in the action. Step inside the huddle as Tom Brady calls the plays. Go under the hood and review controversial calls just like a replay official. Learn the playbook from head coach Bill Belichick. Take your best shot at a game-winning field goal in the snow and let the confetti rain down while you gaze at the Patriots' 3 Vince Lombardi trophies.
Back to back, 3 out of 4.
Yes, it's a dynasty. And don't miss the 30-foot-high displays honoring the team's greatest players or the signature film showing the history of football in New England. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Mass. And is open 7 days a week. Call 508-698-4800 for more information or go online to thehall@patriotplace.com. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. An unforgettable, exciting, interactive experience.
Hour number 2 inside the playbook for a Tuesday here on American Airlines Patriots.com radio. Pats beating Baltimore 27-21 on Sunday and get ready to now take to the road and go to the Mile High City of Denver to take on the Broncos this coming Sunday as Patriots are 3-1. And yes, it is a statistical oddity. It hasn't happened before, but it's going to happen on Sunday. This will be the 5th straight week that New England has faced an undefeated football team. That's right. Yeah, because the first week the Bills were undefeated, as everybody else was in the league. But nevertheless, they did not have a loss yet on that side of their ledger. So this will be, count them, 5 straight weeks now that the Patriots will have faced a team that has not yet lost. I think that's actually pretty cool myself. You know, so they played the Jets, who were 1-0. Falcons 2-0, Ravens are 3-0, and now they'll play the Broncos, who are 4-0. So I think that probably tells us, as I was talking about at the tail end of the last hour, I think it probably tells us that at least, you know, this part of the schedule for the Patriots, while certainly some things have happened to make some of these teams a little better, and they played a little bit better than we supposed that they would, that this part of the schedule is a little bit more difficult than originally we thought it might be. Couple that with the fact that, yeah, Tom Brady's had a couple of struggles here and there, certainly, with his offense and with the offense gelling together and, you know, trying to, you know, continue to work through the struggles and rehab from his knee injury that, you know, this team, you know, has not, you know, picked up, so shall we say, exactly where 2007 left off, but they're not bad either. Not bad either. All right, the nitpick that I guess I really have mainly for this past Sunday has to do still with Tom Brady. I kind of called him out of the carpet last week's show. Tom was my nitpick. I said, You know, Tom, you need to, I mean, obviously, and everybody knew this. It was the obvious nitpick to make. He was overthrowing receivers. He overthrew at least four of them, two of them of which could have gone for touchdowns against Atlanta 2 weeks ago. And while we didn't see as much of that, there were still a couple of overthrows. There was one underthrow that I can recall. Was he perfect? No. Is he ever going to be perfect? Well, he never was to begin with. We just kind of supposed that he was because he was Tom Terrific. And yet, you know, you know, the emperor's not wearing any clothes. He's just, you know, he's as fallible as the rest of us. Is he? Did I see improvement? Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Did I think he stepped up in the pocket better? Yes. Was he willing to scramble with the ball? Yes. He did all of those things. So it was a step in the right direction. It's still not where he was 2 years ago. It's still not pre-knee injury Tom. But I did see enough to where I can definitively say, and I'm sure most of you feel the same way, that yes, it was better. It still needs work. That's nitpick. And kind of along those lines, Patriots' red zone offense is still poor. It's not even good. It's poor. They still have yet to have that confidence inside the opponent's 20-yard line that they're going to knock it into the end zone. Now, with the weapons that this team has at their disposal, with Moss, with Welker, with a guy who now all of a sudden has hands in Benjamin Watson that we didn't know really previously existed. He hadn't really shown us that, you know, over his last few years here. But, you know, he's made probably, arguably, two of the best catches of the season. So if he's got hands like that, you'd have to consider him a weapon in the red zone. Guy likes, Baker, who, frankly, I thought would be the go-to guy in the red zone. And they, you know, he's caught one. He did it last week, but they haven't really gone to him as much as I thought they would go to him. So that's a little bit of a disappointment for me. I'd love to see them go to him more. And maybe that's another nitpick unto itself. But, you know, with the weapons you have at your disposal. And yeah, Fred Taylor, I think you have to consider a weapon. Sammy Morris, he's been great out of the backfield receiving. Guy like Kevin Falk as well, who we know can get you the tough yard when you need it, who you know will go to the turf and lay out and pick up a football, you know, on a pass when you need it. He did that this last week against Baltimore. I mean, this team has some weapons. They should be better than they are in the red zone. So what's holding them back? Two words. Tom Brady. That's it. Two words.
Hell no.
Well, I know Tom, you know, might disagree. His teammates might disagree. But the fact is, this is all on Brady, as far as I'm concerned. Now, one other factor I want you to consider in terms of nitpickiness here. The fact that the Patriots really don't have what I would call a go-to solid number three receiver. They miss Jabbar Gaffney, okay? They miss him. I don't think any of us really realized what kind of a role he played, but he was dependable. Yeah, did he drop a few passes? Yeah, he dropped a couple. Obviously, I think we all remember some particularly painful ones even a year ago. But he was a guy that you didn't have any qualms going to. Your number three receiver was Sam Aiken. Now, that's against Baltimore. Now, that's not taking anything away from Sam Aiken, but he made this team why, kids? Because he's a special teamer. Yes, first and foremost, he's a special teamer. But he's there as that third receiver because of the failure of Joey Galloway to comprehend what it takes to get on the same page as Tom Brady. So now we're seeing, with Galloway's just, you know, utter and complete failure to this point in time, now we're seeing how valuable a guy like Gaffney can be. And we're seeing how valuable a third receiver in this offense can be, should be, and is. So I'm going to nitpick a little bit and say that, frankly, I think the Patriots missed the boat. Should have found a way to re-sign Jabbar Gaffney and bring him back. We wouldn't be having this discussion right now. Did they think that they could have that they were upgrading when they thought that they could get Joey Galloway for Jabbar Gaffney? Yeah, sure. Most of us probably on paper, at least initially, would say, well, that's interesting. Okay, go ahead. I think most of us would say that. But in hindsight, big mistake. Big mistake. So those are my nitpicks. Not a lot to fall back on. I don't have any nitpicks with the defense. I don't. I have no nitpicks with the defense. Do I wish they wouldn't give up a point? Well, of course I do. But I'm being realistic here. This is the NFL. This team is doing its job defensively. And when you consider the personnel changes that have made that they have made defensively, and we seem to mention this at least once a week now, but with the personnel changes that they have made, the fact is that this team is the defense is keeping them in ball games. That Gary Guyton has largely been an unsung hero. That Brandon Merriweather and Brandon McGowan are developing into solid, if not even potentially, all-pro caliber at safety. I don't want to put all-pro and those two guys just yet in that club yet, but let's just say they've been standouts. I mean, who knew anything about Brandon McGowan before he got here? Did you even know he played for Chicago? You know, I had to look it up. I looked it up in the media guide. I was like, all right, what's McGowan's background? What do we know about the guy? And yet, you know, it's like, wow, how did anybody else miss on this guy? And Merriweather's turning into the guy, I said this before the season, as the season got started, Merriweather's turning into the guy that needs to be and should be and now is the vocal leader on this defense. He is taking the role. Now let's add into the equation the news that came out yesterday here on Patriots Monday when Bill Belichick told the guys on EEI that a deal for Junior Seahawks could be in the works. He didn't deny it. He said yes, that he came in for a physical this week, and it could happen. And it could happen perhaps as soon as this week. That doesn't mean that he's necessarily going to be in uniform on Sunday. I guess, you know, stands to reason that, you know, it could happen because, I mean, he doesn't have as far to come. He could meet the team in Denver. But, you know, when you look at it on paper, it makes perfect sense for it to happen. I mean, Jerod Mayo, I know, returned to a limited amount of practice last week. Chances are he'll probably practice a little this week and continue his rehab. I just don't see the Patriots getting Mayo back into the lineup before the bye week. Why would you do that? Unless he's 100% cleared to go, why would you take a shot at anything less than 100% on, you know, your franchise future defensively? I just don't see that happening. If that's the case, Seau is a perfect plug into the scenario. Okay, he's perfect. You know, while Guyton's going well and things are going well with him, you have a guy who comes in who understands, who knows the defense, who keeps himself obviously in tip-top shape to begin with. Hell, he's been riding bulls and getting stomped by him. Anybody see that? You know, that reality TV show that he has, and he was actually a rodeo clown, and the bull actually kind of halfway stomped on him, and he just kind of got up and laughed. Loved it! That's Junior Seau, man. That's awesome. But here's a guy that could come right in and fill in over the next 2 weeks. Then, you know, bye week, and then bang, Mayo's back. And so when Seau says, you know, and he said in the interview, we talked about this earlier this year on the program, that, you know, he thought he might have, you know, 6 good weeks to give, you know, the team if they needed him, you know, have Belichick call me kind of thing. Well, it doesn't mean that it has to be the last 6 games of the season. Doesn't mean that it has to be 6 games in the season. Plus, you know, you get veteran presence like that. You bring another vocal leader into the clubhouse. And, yes, I realize that while this team has tried to, has certainly done a really good job of getting younger defensively, I just didn't think, and I don't think most of us thought that they would take as big a bite this year in that as they have done. But while they're getting younger defensively, they still, you know, could use a little support emotionally, leadership-wise, in the huddle, on the sideline, in the locker room, and Seau can present that. Seau is a luxury rather than a necessity, and I think you want to bring in Junior Seau as a luxury, not as a necessity. It's better for Junior. It's better for the Patriots. And that's, I think, what this would be. If it happens as soon as this week, as rumor has seemed to indicate it could, and Mike Reese on ESPNBoston.com was the first one to bring it out, Pro Football Talk has also been talking about it as well, then great. I think this is the perfect time to bring him in because you want to, not because you have to. And then you have him in the fold, and God forbid, knock on wood, Something else happens to a middle linebacker. He's already in the fold. Bang, he steps in. It's a good scenario. That's why you do it. You don't, you know, I know that a few emailers here, and I'm going to get to some of these emails, I promise. But, you know, some have wondered, well, why would you make that move when they made a concerted effort to grow younger defensively? Because he's quote-unquote Junior Seau. That's all I really need to say. He's Junior Seau. He's a freak. And I mean that nicely. He's an emotional. He's a physical.
I'd like to see you say that to his face.
No, I think he would have to even... I don't think he would take that the wrong way. He's a freak in a good kind of way. He's a special person. I mean, hell, I'd love to be in that kind of shape and able to, you know, whack guys who are, you know, half my age when I'm, you know, when I was 40. Ah, I mean, you know, I could still run when I was 40. That was about it. A little different. He was blessed with God-given ability, just tremendous ability. And, you know, I think it'd be great for the Patriots to be able to bring him in on their terms. And I think he certainly would fulfill a nice role for the team as well. Okay, now let's get to some emails as promised. And by the way, coming up at the last part of our final hour here, I'm going to let you hear the press conference with Patriots defensive coordinator Dean Pease. We normally post this stuff on the website for you, and I'm sure you'll be able to get that here elsewhere on the website. But I wanted to play it for you here inside the playbook to give it special attention. Because along the lines as I'm just saying, I did not have a nitpick with the Patriots defense. And a lot of that is because they have exceeded expectations based on what, you know, present-day standards are. They've played well. And you'd have to think that with the addition of Mayo, or the re-addition of Mayo, and maybe with Seau in the middle, that the team all of a sudden becomes a little bit deeper and maybe a little bit more emotional and certainly a little bit stronger. And the one thing that this team has done well is they've been strong up the middle thus far. Give a lot of credit to guys like Guyton and certainly, you know, Will Fork and the guys that play the middle of the defense. That would have to include the safeties at some point. They've been very strong. So because the defense, and rightfully so, has been a pleasant surprise to this point in time, we wanted to give you know, Dean Pease his conversation with members of the Patriots media earlier today here at Gillette Stadium. We wanted to provide that to you, so we're going to have that coming up in about 30 minutes or so. All right, now let's get to the emails. Webradio@patriots.com, and if you want to call, you can 508-543-7482. Mick from Ireland says, first time emailer to your show, new to your show as well. So I thank you very much, Mick, for sending us your email. I hope that you'll be a frequent contributor here. He says, I'd take Matt Ryan, talking about our quarterback question, whether you'd take either Ryan or Flacco at this stage. I'd take Matt Ryan. I don't have any proper reasons, to be honest. I like the way he looks in the pocket, like not afraid to stand in there and get the ball to go where it needs to go. Don't get me wrong. I think Flacco has great upside, but as of today, I'd go with Ryan. I have to admit, I'm right there with you, Mick. For the quarterbacks, I'm going Peyton first. He's just showing why he's rated as one of the greatest quarterbacks ever, even without Reggie Wayne now and Harrison like then. He says, I'm going Drew Brees. I think he's just playing great ball this year. And then I'll go Tom Brady third, like he played well last week but didn't start off on fire. So that's why he is third on my list. Then things get difficult for me because I don't get to watch much football since I'm from Ireland. Okay, agreed. But he says, but I'll say Eli Manning would be next. What he has done with what he has got is great. And I hate to do it, but Brett Favre should be there. He looks great so far for the Vikings. If I was to nitpick, it would be let's get Taylor in the game more so he can run while Maroney dances to the disco beat in the backfield. Let's let the cornerbacks get tighter in the first quarter like they have been in the third and the fourth. Like, I'm sure there is more, but that's enough for my first email. Good first email, Mick. All right. Good job. Good first email. Solid contribution there. I can't say that I disagree with your list of five QBs right now, which was the other part of my email question of the day today. Hard to argue, certainly, with Manning at the top. Hard to argue Brees being second based on the way he's played this season. Then he's got Brady, and then he's got Eli Manning 4 and Brett Favre 5. That's why I asked the question. I wanted to see who differed and where. And I figured because I had both Eli Manning and Brett Favre just out of my top five. I figured those would be the two guys that would deserve to be in the most. I had his 4 and 5. I had Ryan and Flacco. All right. Good job, Mick. Fat Pat, you talked about undefeated rookie coaches, and seriously, the Colts coach being 4-0 is not even worth mentioning. I like the fact that Russell mentioned a few weeks ago, Russell Baxter, I assume, exactly what I was thinking. If Manning loses the MVP honors to Breeze, he should at least win Coach of the Year. Not exactly what he said, but I definitely feel where he's coming from. I don't even know who that head coach was until last week watching ABC's pregame show, and I already forgot what his name is. That would be Jim Caldwell. Jim Caldwell. You know, the fact is that the coach, you know, and I realize, Pat, that, you know, you want to give credit where credit is due to a guy like, you know, Peyton Manning for the Colts 4-0 start. Yet Caldwell, he tutored basically under Tony Dungy. He followed Dungy everywhere. Caldwell has been a head coach before. He has not had success really as a head coach before, either in the pros or collegiately where he was. But he's had a long time now to work under Dungy. So really, I think all he's doing is kind of continuing what Tony Dungy had already established in Indianapolis. And you still have to go through the game planning. And yes, every head coach is going to put in a few of his own little individual, you know, twists and turns. But you're still looking at basically a Tony Dungy type team in the Colts. And Caldwell, all he's doing is really managing that. He's smart enough now as a head coach to know that in this particular situation, you really need to be more of a game manager than a head coach. You already had things pretty well in place. You already had personnel pretty well in place. Now, yeah, you lose a guy like Anthony Gonzalez as a receiver, but you know what? So you open it up and you give another couple of guys opportunity and you make Dallas Clark a go-to guy, which they've done, and successfully, I might add. Now, Tony Dungy didn't do that. Jim Caldwell did that. So while I get your point about, you know, this being basically Manning's team, you know, Caldwell has done well enough as a head coach to at least not screw things up and not mess with something that clearly has been working in Indianapolis for an extended period of time, based on the fact that this is the fifth time since 2000 they've started 4-0. All right. Pat says, top five QBs right now. Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, Tom Brady, Joe Flacco, Brett Favre. He says, Matt Ryan is surely in my top 10. I just think Flacco is tougher and can play in all elements. Well, I would argue that you could say the same thing about Ryan, too. I mean, God, did he not play at BC? I'd say that's an element, you know, type of quarterback. It's not like, you know, he's been in a dome his whole life. Says his performance in the clutch is still questionable compared to Ryan, though. Well, to me, that's the bottom line of a quarterback. Can he win a game? When the game is on the line, can a quarterback lift a team up, put it on his shoulders, and take them into the promised land, brother? And I think Ryan can, while Flacco is the one that is still questionable. Okay. Just nitpicking here with you, Pat. That's okay. Little brother Manning, Eli, is looking good, but does not make my five because he's beaten crappy teams to be 4-0. Washington, Dallas, Tampa, Kansas City. And then Pat says Broncos will be 4-1 after Sunday. He says score will be 30-17. All right. So we got a prediction in there. That's okay. Sounds good. Let's see. This one just came in. Let's jump on this one here. This one comes from Josh in Arlington, Virginia. He says, I don't see why you were arguing about the penalty on Suggs. Read the rule. Suggs had a clear path when he lunged at Brady's knees and made contact. Because this is obviously not me, because I haven't talked about that yet. And then he goes to print the rules out. So you must have had this argument with somebody else, Josh. I'll leave this here for somebody else. As far as that play is concerned, I didn't have a problem with the call. Is it cheesy? Yes. You know, by the way, if you want to intend an email for PFW, you need to make sure that you intend the email for PFW and let us know. So that way I don't waste the email. And if you intend one for me, make sure that you got me included in there as well. That way the PFW guys will leave it for me here in the playbook. Two different shows, okay? I thought that the call on Suggs was fair. It was a little cheesy. I could see where, you know, the Ravens, if I'm a Ravens fan, I could certainly see where you'd have a gripe. But the fact is that he was low and he came in hard And if Brady doesn't step out of the way, then he makes clear contact and undercuts Tom, and goodness only knows what happens. So, you know, the fact is that he was below the knees. And if you're going to make a move toward the quarterback and you're positioned below the knees, you are going to get flagged, period. And that goes for a Patriot player.
And Tom Brady, if you're listening, take off the skirt and put on some slacks. Toughen up.
Now, that was Rodney Harrison, of course, on, Sunday Night Football, Sunday Night Football in America, that he does with NBC. And he was saying that with tongue firmly planted in cheek because they're buddies. I think you probably knew that, although some of you were probably taken aback by those remarks when you first heard them and you wondered, oh, whoa, what is he doing here? Oh, Rodney, all of a sudden, you're not on my favorite Patriots of all time list. He's kidding. Tom Brady said as much in his Patriots Monday conversation yesterday. You know, they're going to go back and forth. They like to bust each other's chops up a lot, like they were still teammates. And then, of course, Rodney was asked to clarify, and he clarified, and he said, I've got no more respect for any other quarterback in the league other than Tom Brady, and he's a tough guy, yada, yada, works as hard, starts earlier, finishes later, all the things that we've already known about Tom all these days, all these years that he's been here. Rodney's saying things because that's what NBC pays him to do. I'm sure the suits at NBC loved that. They loved it. Oh, controversy, great. People are going to watch. They don't care whether you like Rodney Harrison or not. All they want you to do is watch him. He doesn't have to be liked. They wanted him to bring that persona on the air with him when they hired him at NBC Sports. Okay? That's what some, you know, Patriots fans are missing here when they say, oh, Rodney, how could you say that? They're missing that. They paid him to be on the set, the type of guy he was when he was on the field. Brash, bold, taking cheap shots. That's just what they want him to do. They want him to be a ratings grabber. They want people to watch him and listen to him, whether they like him or not. And that's all he did on Sunday night. And I think Tom does, by the way, slip on the slacks again against Denver this week. Just my own personal thought. All right, here we go. Patriots Playbook. Hi, I'm from Atlanta, originally from Westwood. Longtime listener, first-time emailer. Well, I appreciate it. This is from David. So, David, welcome to the Playbook. I like Ryan a lot more. I thought Flacco was a lot better in college, and I actually didn't think the kid from Boston would produce in the NFL, but Ryan proved me wrong early last year. He is accurate and can make reads. He isn't the best quarterback in the league, but in 5 years he may be amazing. I tend to think that you'll be accurate on that assessment, David, although I don't know that Flacco was a lot better in college. Consider the competition that Flacco had. I mean, I know he took Delaware. I think he took Delaware to a national title game. So, I mean, they were certainly, you know, in the upper echelon in the football championship subdivision, 1AA. But I don't know that he was the better college quarterback. Physically, he might certainly have been a little bit stronger than Matt Ryan, as Matt Ryan has, you know, I think physically gotten better, stronger since he's left Boston College. Again, no disrespect to BC. Ryan probably had a further way to go. He wasn't blessed with some of the natural, I think, ability that Flacco seems to have. I think, you know, Flacco is, certainly a guy that if I had him on my team, I'd be very happy I had. I just right now would favor Matt Ryan slightly. Okay, here he goes. Top five quarterbacks. He says Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Eli Manning, Brett Favre. All right, so we're getting, you know, pretty consensus top three in Manning, Brady, Brees. Seems to be pretty consensus top three. And I know ESPN, no, it wasn't ESPN. I was watching, was it ESPN last night? No, I think I was watching Bob Costas. Yeah, it was Bob Costas when he was doing his Sunday night interview at halftime with Drew Brees. And one of the questions he asked, and by the way, ask a question, Bob. Bob Costas is known for what? His ability to interview, right? Everybody would have to consider Bob Costas one of the best sports interviewers that we have. He didn't ask a question. Until he said, Drew, what do you think about being mentioned in the same breath as Tom Brady and Peyton Manning in terms of the elite of the quarterbacks in the NFL? That's the first question he asked, and it was like the last question. Yeah. Well, it was just like, you know, it's interviewing 101. You're not on air with the guy to be buddy-buddy with the guy. and to sidle up to him and schmooze with him. You're on air with him to ask him a question. Just a pet peeve of mine. And I do this with my journalism class at Emerson, too. You know? I do. Ask a question. Anyway. So it doesn't surprise me that we've got the top three fairly consensus here. And then he's got Eli Manning and Brett Favre, which is tough to argue with based on the success of their teams. I just kind of tended to skew a little younger based on their upside. There's that word again. David, thank you for the email. That's good stuff. All right, let's sneak in another time out here. We've got more time for your emails. Webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482, the telephone number if you want to share by phone. Internet questions of the day, webmail questions of the day have to do with quarterbacks, whether you would take Flacco over Ryan or Ryan over Flacco in terms of the young QBs, or what is your top five right now as of October 6, 2009? Who are your top five QBs in the NFL? So that you can ponder that. Also, I want you to nitpick from the win on Sunday over the Baltimore Ravens. Coming up, we'll continue with your emails. A couple of other Patriots notes as we wrap up Baltimore and begin now to move full steam ahead toward Denver inside the playbook.
At American Airlines, we know it seems like you're on the road almost as much as your favorite sports team. We know you've scheduled a business trip to a city where your team happens to be playing that night. And we know that on every trip, you inevitably forget to bring a toothbrush. But you never forget that old pair of socks you wear on game day to bring your team luck. We know for you, it's not just a seat on a flight to a place. It's a seat on a flight to your life. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Okay, so to recap, these are last year's sales results, and here's how we stand now. I need some clutch players who can get us some numbers up on the board. Ted.
Yes, sir.
In the fourth quarter. We've come from behind in the fourth quarter before. Ted.
What?
I need you here in the shotgun. Put on this helmet.
It's a garbage can.
Do it.
But it's dark in here.
Susan.
Yes?
What? You're going to reverse right and then break left at the cubicle.
What?
I am.
Let's go!
Mr. Krevelin?
That was awkward.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
You got?
Yes.
What?
Yes.
What?
You can take the trash can off now.
What?
Keep the change, patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services and Bank of America NA, member PIC, copyright 2009, Bank of America Corporation.
Hello?
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
50 seasons of New England Patriots football. 3 Super Bowl championships. Endless memories.
It's good! It's good!
Live them all at the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Celebrate the greatest players, moments, and teams in Patriots history with sights and sounds that put you right in the action. Step inside the huddle as Tom Brady calls the plays. Go under the hood and review controversial calls just like a replay official. Learn the playbook from head coach Bill Belichick. Take your best shot at a game-winning field goal in the snow and let the confetti rain down while you gaze at the Patriots' 3 Vince Lombardi trophies.
Back-to-back, 3 out of 4.
Yes, it's a dynasty. And don't miss the 30-foot-high displays honoring the team's greatest players or the signature film showing the history of football in New England. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Mass. And is open 7 days a week. Call 508-698-4800 for more information or go online to thehall@patriotplace.com. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. An unforgettable, exciting, interactive experience.
John Rook with the Inside Patriots Playbook here on this Tuesday. Webradio@patriots.com. Patriots held the Ravens to 21 total points. 14 of those on from the offense, right? after the Ravens had come into the game ranked second in the NFL, averaging better than 34 points per game. In the first three games, Baltimore had totaled 38, 31, and 34 points against the opposition. Patriots defense entered the game on Sunday, ranked sixth in the NFL, third in the AFC in terms of yards allowed. They have not allowed more than 19 in a game so far, although 21 technically, but you realize the defense only gave up 14. And have done an outstanding job, as we mentioned beforehand, better than I think we all really had a right to expect, considering the changeover in personnel on that side of the football. A couple of other positives about the defense. Lee Bodden intercepted Joe Flacco late in the first half, as the Patriots had a 17-7 halftime lead. His first member interception as a member of the Patriots, and the first interception for the team in 2009. And again, it came in week four, but at least it happened. Mike Wright had his first career two-sack game on Sunday, as he dropped Flacco twice for a total of 17 yards in losses. He had 2.5 sacks all of last season. Darius Butler hit Derek Mason, break up a pass on 3rd and 4 in the last minute, forcing Baltimore into that fourth down try that obviously, you know, Clayton didn't catch. Ty Warren stopped Ray Rice for no gain on a 3rd and 1. Patriots holding on to a 6-point lead with 5.5 minutes to play in the game. Big play, huge play. And then Gary Guyton and Vince Wilfork stopped Willis McGahee for no gain on the 4th down next play, and then forced the turnover on downs. You get the sense now what I'm talking about? I'm talking about the defense. Overall, the improvement of the defense. It's getting better, and it's a little bit surprising, perhaps. The architect of that defense is Patriots defensive coordinator Dean Pease. We'll let you listen into his press conference with members of Patriots media from Gillette Stadium here earlier today.
Dean, starting with the secondary, it seems like you guys have a lot of options going 7-8 deep almost in this most recent game. Could you comment on the just sort of having all those options and how you feel the secondary has come together?
Well, we play a lot of packages, so we need a lot of guys back there in different spots, and just always trying to find the best place to put those guys. We did some things well in the last game. We also did some things not as well as we certainly want to. Every game we go into, we got a little different maybe coverage package or scheme, and some guys kind of fit that scheme better than others. So in some games you may see a lot more guys play, and some games you may see fewer guys play because they may just not fit what we're trying to do against that particular team. So, I think we got a lot of we got a little experience there with Sean and Lee and James, but I think, some of these young guys are coming along pretty good and giving us some depth and giving us some ability to try to do some different things using them.
I had asked Bill a similar question, and I was sort of mentioning how one drive in the fourth quarter, it caught my eye that you had Will Height and Butler out there at corner, and I was sort of asking him about, is that a pre-planned rotation, and how do you decide who's out on the field when you have so many players? And he mentioned some of it's pre-planned, and then part of it was an equipment issue during that game with one player. I'm curious, what was that equipment issue in the game, and how is it managing that rotation?
Well, it's he's right, Mike. It's simply a situation. Sometimes we kind of go into a game already saying, okay, second series, or maybe so many plays into the game, we're going to maybe rotate this guy in to keep everybody fresh for a two-minute situation at the end of the half or the end of the game, or just we feel like competitively the guy's done real well all week in practice and deserves a chance to get out there and kind of be in the rotation and playing. And, again, it just really varies on maybe the number of plays that we've played, how the guy's playing, how the other guy's practiced all week. It could be a situation in the game where it is just an equipment issue, or maybe a guy's been on a couple of special teams and, they've run back a kick, or we got a penalty and you had to do the kickoff twice. I mean, there's all kinds of things like that where hopefully you have enough depth that you can put a guy in and feel like it's not going to tail off too much. And Right now, obviously, if we put those two guys in there together, we had confidence in them.
How strange is this week for you as you start preparing for an offense that probably looks pretty similar to the one that you see every day?
Well, you know, it almost kind of, you don't really kind of think of it in that regards. It's really, certainly there's similarities, and I mean, I'm not unaware of the fact that it's Josh, but really when you prepare as a coach, you get kind of in a routine every week of, okay, here's how I break down the team, here's how I work on, here's what they do on first and second down, here's what they do on third down, here's what they do in short yardage, red area, goal line. You just kind of get into a routine that you just take it as a team, and you do it, and then, you know, at some point in time, you may say, oh, that's similar to what we do, and in that case, you know, there's a few of those this week, but really, it's a matter of kind of routine for most coaches, I believe, that no matter who you're playing, you just kind of, you know, get into that routine, and that's how you kind of build your week.
Dean, this was the third straight game we saw Brandon McGowan in there starting and then James Sanders coming in sub packages. Is that just you feel one guy is better coming off the bench in the sub package, or is that an indication that maybe Brandon has a slight edge over James at this point in the season?
It's still very competitive. We still feel good about all those guys back there. It's just kind of, like I said a little earlier, kind of goes game by game what we think and maybe who they have on offensive personnel or what their scheme is, who kind of best fits that, and how are we going to utilize our players in the best fashion. And that really can change from week to week. I mean, it's still, you know, very competitive, and it's just going to be week to week thing.
And just another question.
I had a couple of Sunday games. Can you talk maybe a little bit about the confidence level you have in him and the progression that he's made?
I actually missed the first part of the question there.
Mike Wright had a couple of big plays for you late in the game. Can you just maybe talk about your confidence level in him and the progression that he's made?
We had confidence in him all along. I mean, I don't think it's necessarily just all of a sudden the last couple of games. He's made plays for us before, and in years past down in Tennessee game, I remember him making some plays down there for us late in the year. I think it was in 06. And I mean, there's been just, again, he's in that rotation. We've been playing more four-man line this year. But even when we go to 34 and we go back and forth, I mean, we have a lot of confidence in him, as I do in all those guys up front. I mean, I feel like we can rotate some guys in there and play different positions and not have a drop-off.
Like you said, he's made plays in years past, but he probably doesn't maybe have a starring role, but he's a guy that you've counted on for quite a while now.
Well, it's that way. I think there's a lot of guys sometimes that way, that maybe one guy will get picked out to be, get a lot of the hype, but then we know as coaches behind the scenes, we'll look at film and say, you know, it may look like another guy played a great game and maybe he didn't, and then the guy that everybody didn't even notice really played a great game. Just a lot of other people got the credit for it. I mean, that's happened with Jarvis. That's happened with Vince. That's happened with a lot of guys.
Dean, how did Trudell look kind of jumping in with kind of short notice?
Who was that?
Trudell,
Sands. Oh, Sands? Oh, excuse me.
Yes.
I didn't hear the first part of it. No, I thought he did okay. I mean, we didn't ask. We asked him to do a few things, and he jumped in there, and we got some plays out of him and some production out of him and got some things that we wanted to get. And so, again, he went in there and did his role on the defense like we asked him to do and, you know, did a good job.
And a final question? Dean, just how good was it for your group of guys to get that first interception? And it was really a great play by Lee to come up with that interception, but just to kind of break the ice there and get that first pick. I know that's not always indicative of how a secondary is playing, but you obviously do want to get some ball disruption and turn over the football.
Oh, absolutely. We've been pleased with some of the production that we've had back there. We had probably more pass breakups here in the first four games than we may have had all last season. I don't know. We've been around the ball quite a bit, and, you know, we haven't given up as many big plays, and you know, we've been happy with those things, but you're right. You like to get those turnovers. You like to get some interceptions and show something for in productivity for, you know, your efforts. And, you know, it was great getting that interception. That was a great catch. It was just a great catch, very aware of the sideline. And you know, I think it got everybody in the secondary and the whole defense, in fact, the whole team excited.
Thank you, Coach.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That's Dean Pease, a Patriots defensive coordinator, earlier today here at Gillette on a conference call with members of the Patriots media. And, you know, it's always good from time to time, and we'll do this throughout the course of the season, especially when it's timely and pertinent and certainly interesting in terms of being, you know, important to the overall welfare, current welfare, state of being of the New England Patriots, to hear from Dean Pease on these particular instances, you know, when the defense is playing well and maybe even when things are struggling, if that ever happens. So I think it's good to be able to get a little insight from him, especially now that, you know, he is of the, you know, ability to, you know, let his feelings be known. I know there's been a demand, so that's why they've kind of allowed Patriots coordinators and also Nick Caserio, who's kind of stepped in for Scott Piola this year, as many of you know, as the player personnel guy, to have the opportunity to speak with members of the media. And so the Patriots media has relations department has made them available. Previously, you'll recall when Bill Belichick was here, assistants didn't talk. And then when the assistants started, you know, getting big, not just in size, we're talking about, you know, Charlie Weiss, Romeo Crennel, when things were going well, then that's when, you know, the demand became such where they, you know, changed their attitude and their beliefs were letting assistants have an opportunity to speak for themselves, you know, came about. By the way, I don't know if you've seen this week's issue of Sports Illustrated yet. It does have Mario Rivera on the Mariano Rivera of the Yankees on the cover, but there's a two-page spread on Bill Belichick in SI this week, and it's entitled Belichick's Biggest Challenge. The test for the Patriots in 2009 is to remain competitive at the highest level while working in new players and schemes, all just part of the coach's grand plan. Damon Hack is the writer. Who spent some time here, I believe it was prior to the game last week, right after the Patriots beat Atlanta. And I'm going to share with you an excerpt from his article if you have not seen it. And PFW this week is also reprinted a bit of this article as well, so you can just get some insight from someone else's perspective other than somebody who covers the team on a day-in and day-out basis. Okay, so this is truly a national perspective here. Says here, Belichick has always been hands-on, but on Sunday he had a death grip on the game plan. He harped all week about keeping all-pro tight end Tony Gonzalez under wraps. Gonzalez had one catch. Drew up a play on the sideline that Tom Brady and tight end Chris Baker improvised upon, resulting in a 36-yard touchdown pass, and successfully rolled the dice twice on fourth down in the third quarter, including from New England's own 24 with a 16-10 lead. That was kind of crazy, Baker said later with a laugh. Despite all the shakeups, the Patriots have not lost back-to-back games in almost 3 years. That's the kind of mark players both old and new respect and want to extend. Cornerback Sean Springs, who spent 7 years with Seattle and 5 with the Redskins before joining New England 6 months ago, has fully bought into Belichick's methods and mystique. His quote here is, "He can coach everything," Springs says. "He's just like a brain walking around on some legs." So there you go. Little perspective, perhaps, to let you know that, you know, it's all a part of the mad scientist, I guess, trying to reformulate, you know, this current New England Patriots roster while keeping them competitive and perhaps even ultimately a Super Bowl contender at the same time. Got some news to share with you here, kids. PFT's been reporting, a couple of other websites now reporting, that Ravens linebacker Brendan Iambadejo, is done for the season. You might recall that he was injured in this last week's game with the Patriots, tore his quadriceps. And this was just a week after he won the AFC Defensive Player of the Week award. So they place him on Iambadejo on injured reserve today. Three-time Pro Bowler, largely because he's a special teamer. But he was playing 20 to 30 snaps on defense as a pass rusher. He was in there, got nailed. And by the way, a lot of injuries. Was that the longest game maybe ever that you can remember ever being a part of? I mean, non-overtime, of course.
Seemed pretty long to me.
Well, I know it did. Seemed very long to all of us in the booth, too. But I think there's a couple of reasons for that. One, and the overriding factor here, is that it was just an extremely physical game. You know, there were a lot of injuries. Fortunately for the Patriots, not so many, as Baltimore suffered. But because of the Ian Badejo injury, the Ravens have re-signed Prescott Burgess from the practice squad to fill the gap. Burgess, of course, you recall, traded to New England, and then he was with New England's, and then he was re-signed by New England and put on the practice squad, and they just now signed him off of the practice squad to take Ian Badejo's place on the roster. So Prescott Burgess is back now with Baltimore, where he was when the whole stinking season started. So, anyway, back to some emails here. Let's see what we have here. I got to update it first. And there it is. Gene sends this note. And Gene says, Gene from Daytona Beach, I believe what Suggs did was intentional and out of frustration, not to hit Tom, but to make him nervous enough in the pocket to get him out of his game plan. I also have no problem with what Rodney said. He was just busting Tom. Tom knows if Rodney was on the field and someone took a cheap shot at his quarterback, the other team's quarterback, better have his head on a swivel. No question. 100% right on, Gene. You're probably right. He probably did want to just kind of unnerve Tom. But the problem is that he did it from an almost prone position on the field, and he clearly was below Brady's knees. And when you make a play for the quarterback and you are below his knees, that's the Brady rule. That's what's come into effect. That's what happened last year and what caused him to go down against Kansas City. You're going to get called, whether it was your intent or not. It's going to get called. It's like the Tuck rule. It's going to get called now. We all know that. So that's, you know, and again, Pats fans, you're going to have to remember that there probably is going to be an opportunity at some point in time this season where this call is going to go against New England. It can happen. Just be prepared for it because it could happen. Strippers, his five quarterbacks, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Phillip Rivers, Big Ben, and then he says Sam Bradford. Ha, ha, ha. Bradford's got to be healthy to play here, bud. They haven't given him the go-ahead for the vaunted Baylor Bears this week, so you need to be thinking about that. My guess is that they may save him for Texas, although, you know, you can't win anything anyway. You got two losses, brother. It's all over. He's in the good. Ian in Maryland. We were talking about Mike Martz. He's in the studio on NFL Network. I thought I had remembered that, but I just wasn't sure. So thank you, Ian, for sending that note. Yeah, Mike Martz is now gone from coaching to studio work on NFL Network. How far the mighty have fallen, huh? John sends this, this is Mitch. Sorry, different email here. Mitch sends this email. He says, despise Manning and the fact he knows how good he is and all the little crybaby faces and antics he pulls in big games. He's beaten Tom once in the playoffs, but he is at his surgical best I have ever seen him. I guess he has to be. That team is more or less on his shoulders. That's why I've got him at the top of the heap right now, Mitch. As of today, he's the best quarterback in the game. As of October 6, 2009, best quarterback in the game.
What's up, baby?
How you doing?
Good. You?
Can't argue it.
Short Ox! Short Ox! Short Ox! Richmond, Florida, Buffalo! Short Ox! Richmond, Florida, Buffalo!
Short Ox. Okay. I'd like to see that formation.
Pretty sure he did say Ox, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know why the clip is in the machine. By the way, John Mitch says Phillip Rivers just plain sucks, though he did catch the Steelers sleeping Sunday night. Yeah, well, I've kind of waned on Phillip Rivers. I mean, I don't know. Is he a good quarterback? Yes. I just don't think he's one of the five best. Let's see what else we have here. Yes, Strippers. I did point out that Mark Clayton went to OU. Okay, I says, after seeing my Sooners choke in Miami, I am angry. Yeah, they did kind of. They did kind of. Frankly, I have to be honest with you, Strippers. I really didn't want OU to lose. It's tough for me to root for them. So, you know, that was one of those games where I kind of root for the ground to open up and swallow both teams. But I really didn't want the Sooners to lose because I did want them. It adds more luster to the Texas-Oklahoma game coming up in 2 weeks. So, you know, sorry. You know what? that's the kind of game, though, where OU could be 0-4 and Texas could be 4-0, and you'd still be scared of Oklahoma because it's a rivalry game. And in true rivalry games, and there are few better in college football than Texas-Oklahoma, and I know you will agree with that, in a true rivalry game, you throw everything out the window. It doesn't matter. It's all about emotion that day on that field. What happened to that point in time leading you into that day? Nah. The only thing where, you know, emotion might not get you through is if you have injuries that take players out of the mix. In other words, if Sam Bradford doesn't come back and play, and I give Landry Jones a lot of credit. I think he's been a pretty good young quarterback thus far. He's kind of learning on the fly. But, you know, Landry is not Sam Bradford. So, you know, I frankly want Texas to play Sam Bradford because then you don't have an excuse. Okay. What else do we have here? Oh, Mitch in Palm Harbor, Florida, sent his five. He says, John, you got it nailed, all five. Big Ben is just a product of the system in Pittsburgh. My five were Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Matt Ryan, Joe Flacco. Those were my five. That's what we kind of started the day with today. And we're kind of ending the day with today here as well. As the Patriots now started the season with at least three wins in their first four games, for the fourth straight season, and the only NFL team to begin each of the last four seasons with a record of 3-1 or better through four games. How about that? Did you know that? The only NFL team to begin each of the last four seasons at 3-1 or better through the first four games. Not bad. That's certainly certainly maintaining high standards that we all have around here. Patriots are now 23-4 in the month of October since 2003. They have won 14 of their last 15 in this month. After winning the turnover battle on Sunday, the Patriots are 53-0 when they win the turnover battle since the start of 2003. Now that is a number that I did not know, and that makes me go, whoa. Since the start of 2003 now, six seasons, the Patriots are 53-0 when they are on the plus side in the turnover battle. Okay. What have I said all along? Okay. Games come down to two things, really. Defense and special teams. Can your kicking game keep you in a game and not beat you? And can your defense or your special teams create turnovers and therefore opportunities for your offense and your special teams? That's it. Take care of the football, you're in a ball game. You don't take care of the football, especially in the NFL, when, generally speaking, all teams are fairly equal, not like college football, but in pro football, there's not a whole lot of difference between 1 and 32. A little bit of difference, but not as much as there would be in the college game. And it's all about taking care of the football. Now, if you force the turnovers, you can win. If you don't force the turnovers, you will struggle. Tomorrow, inside the playbook, a couple of good choices. All right. We will have Mark Johnson from KOA in Denver to talk about the Denver Broncos tomorrow. So we'll get into some of that. Eric Scalavino will obviously join us again from Patriots Football Weekly in the opening hour.
Vic Carucci.
Yes. Thank you very much. And Vic Carucci, senior editor for NFL.com and a former contributor, longtime actual contributor to this program and to Patriots.com in general. And certainly a follower of the AFC East for a number of years, during his time as a beat writer in Buffalo. Vic Carucci will be joining us tomorrow inside the playbook as well. This is appointment listening, kids. So if you're up on the Pats, you want to stay up on the Pats, be here tomorrow. Same Pats time, same Pats channel.